Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Taking Stock. This morning, I'm excited to welcome Bruce Tweary and Sebastian Valencia. Bruce and Sebastian are both partners at Clarkston and two of the leaders of our supply chain practice. Both of them have extensive experience. All things related to supply chain have worked closely together through the years, helping improve many of our clients, consumer products, retail, life sciences, industries to help improve their supply chain. And I really was anxious to get their perspective on supply chain as it relates to the coronavirus, specifically in and around risk management. What you're going to hear is a really interesting discussion that talks through some of the short-term impacts that a lot of companies are facing right now. But perhaps more importantly, what are some of the things that they need to put in place to be successful in the future? A lot of what you're going to hear is a shift in mindset for supply chain leaders to be less reactive in firefighting, which they're really, really good at, to become more strategic and to be more proactive in planning for the future and help them react to with resiliency and adaptability, react to a lot of the volatility in the market. Again, not just today, but what we'll expect in the future. So enjoy the discussion. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk soon. Bruce, Sebastian, welcome to Taking Stock.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Bruce. Hey, Steve. How are you? Hey, Sebastian. Hey, so most importantly, Sebastian, congrats on being our first return guest on the podcast.
Always a pleasure to be back.
So actually, the we were going to chat just me and you, but Bruce said how much he enjoyed our discussion last time, but he was talking about how much better he can make it. So he figured he could interject himself into the conversation. So Bruce, we're counting on you.
Oh, absolutely.
So, we sit here on the morning of April 2nd, and obviously we're living through unprecedented times. Coronavirus has changed so much in our world, whether socially, culturally, personally, professionally. It's impossible to really comprehend the sheer magnitude of what we're all dealing with. And I know the three of us have talked every single day over the past few weeks about how we are dealing with this as a firm. But I want to talk to you guys this morning about the implications of the supply chain. Whenever I think supply chain, I think of you two. And I want to talk not only as it relates to the particular virus we're fighting today, but perhaps just as importantly, the broader ramifications going forward. But let's start with the enormous challenge of today. So set aside like the impacts on industries, you know, like hospitality or the airline industry, food service, et cetera. Those industries are really, really struggling. When we think about the consumer products industry, where we all spend a great deal of our time, they're dealing with incredible spikes in demand. I think most of our clients, most leaders in the industry are struggling to keep up with their the need to fulfill the needs of their consumers. Bruce, I was hoping you could kick us off, like talk a little bit about some of those specific challenges that companies are facing and meeting that demand. Just if you could crystallize some of those, that would be helpful.
Yeah, sure. It is really interesting that I've been talking to a few of my clients, as we all have over the last couple of weeks, reaching out and trying to make sure we're staying in touch, even though we're working remote. Mm-hmm. And the consumer product companies are facing increases in demand. So they're actually having great business when compared to the prior year.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what part of consumer products you're in. That demand has spiked. And they're really right now, they're in the midst of trying to hustle to fulfill that demand. Mm-hmm. But as we look a little bit down the road, right, we can start to see some short-term challenges that companies might have. Broadly, it's about reduced capacity, limited access to employees as they self-quarantine right? Do you have somebody to replace that individual on that on that job? Does that shift and its capacity in a plant become diminished? If you're in a warehouse, right? Do you have a specific facility that you know, becomes a little bit of a hotspot and people are out and they can't move product out the door? So it doesn't matter whether it's a manufacturing facility, a warehouse, or the transportation companies. As the virus spreads and it affects those production and distribution capabilities, the companies are going to struggle to meet that spike in demand. Yeah. And it really is a problem across the board.
Yeah, and obviously everything that we are hearing, that's not going to go away anytime soon. And certainly we're going to see that problem increase in the coming weeks and months. So, Sebastian, what options do companies have, like today, in the short term to react? So we'll get to some of the long-term stuff. But today, if you're within the supply chain organization of a consumer products company, facing some of the challenges that Bruce outlined, what are some things that you can institute today to kind of manage through this challenge?
Yeah, I think this is where most of supply chain organizations and leaders thrive. Supply chain organizations and leaders are good firefighters. We supply chain operators and execution leaders tend to look at these problems and come up with very good ideas on how to address an increased spike on demand and then shortage on people, transportation needs, resources, and goods. And organizations are coupling with how to do it in a safe way. You have spikes on demand, but you have restrictions in access to the warehouse, to the manufacturing facility, cross-border containers, international shipments, and the a great amount of supply chain leaders are trying to figure it out, all hands on deck, on daily and maybe twice daily command centers, making sure that the sourcing is still taking place, looking for vendors across locally, regionally, and internationally that are still operating, ensuring that containers and vessels are still bringing goods, that ports are operating, that trucking lanes and railroads are operating, and that they can move goods through the supply chain to make sure that produce, essential goods are still in place and being ready to operate. So there's many news and you know, of course, the health officials and the care workers are first in line and the first heroes, but very much right behind it are supply chain operators that are maintaining and ensuring that this spike on demand and that we continue to have food on our tables, that we continue to have what's needed to support and weather the storm.
Yeah, and it's do you see any one of the things that conversation with a company, and it seems pretty straightforward, but they've shifted what it is they're manufacturing. So they are focusing in on the products. This is a food company that, again, is also increasing, dealing with increased demand. They focused in on now the products that aren't necessarily the most profitable for their business, but are the easiest to supply. So the things that have the easiest recipes, easiest ingredients, the things that are most easily easy for them to turn around. Are we seeing that across the industry where companies are going to shift what it is they're manufacturing? I'm thinking specifically from a food perspective to focus in on things that are most easily for them to be able to turn around.
I believe so. I think we're seeing a reduction on the SKU, the number and the SKU count. I think is what's easiest to manufacture. Also, what do we have materials to manufacture? There's shortages in packing. There's shortages in ingredients. There's shortages in our ability to move goods from point A to point B. So supply chain leaders are being very selective on reducing the amount of the portfolio that can go out of what's currently being able to operate and move in what goods are available to be produced. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think we're seeing it in the shelf, right? The 20, 30 varieties of the same type of item is coming down to a couple, and yeah. and companies are being very selective on what they can do and use the resources wisely, which is a regular activity of the mindset of any supply chain executive on a regular basis.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think the way you put it, Sebastian, is that supply chain leaders are great operators and we're great in managing in the moment. But it's kind of like my stock portfolio, right? We're kind of past the point where there's a lot of great options that are available to us.
Yeah, certainly. Well, let's stay away from our stock portfolios. So let's we'll get to some of that kind of the mindset of a supply chain planner and kind of their being proactive versus reactive. We'll chat about that in a minute. I do want to shift to a little bit of the longer term focus because it is very easy, whether we see it on the nightly news. It's very easy to play, let's play revisionist history and let's look in the rearview mirror and think about things that we could have done to not face some of the challenges we're facing today. But I want to look forward. Unfortunately, this is not the last global pandemic we'll face. I think that's very clear. I think there's going to be many other impacts that will continue to have a profound impact on the global supply chain. So today, looking ahead, what steps should companies be putting in place to manage that volatility that we know lies ahead of us? Bruce, why don't you get us started there?
Well, I think it's very important. I agree with where Sebastian was going. I think it's very important that that supply chain leaders are not just operators, but we're actually planners. So if we're starting to look forward and we're saying it's not just what are the challenges today, but how do we avoid the challenges of tomorrow? Right. I think it's very important that we be planners. The people on Wall Street and economists, they can look forward and say, hey, this is when the next great recession is going to happen. If you're a supply chain professional, though, that's not your job. It's not what you do. Mm-hmm. Right. So a supply chain professional should just expect that bad things are going to happen. She should expect that they're going to be black swans. And you need to make well-reasoned investments to put their companies in a position to manage through it successfully. Mm-hmm. So that the next time around that you'll be in a better position to weather the storm, whatever that storm is. And
so Bruce, it's not necessarily predicting when the next downturn or huge pandemic might happen. It's knowing that it will and ensuring that you have the flexibility to be able to adapt when it does happen. Is that a fair characterization?
That's exactly right. Let's not try and be, futurists and try and be able to predict, mm-hmm. but let's just assume that bad things happen because they always do. It's funny when we said we were going to do this squad cast, I of course went back to my hard drive and started poking around. And I found something from 2009, a decade ago. Mm-hmm. Right. So we were in the midst of the Great Recession. We had the investment banks crumbling. And Sebastian and I were at the same client, and we did a webcast with Laura Cesare, the supply chain shaman. Mm-hmm. And the title of that webcast was Supply Chain Survival Techniques for the New Economic Realities. So 10 years ago, right, we were having pretty much the same conversation around, okay, this idea of risk management, what is it that you should be doing to put your supply chain in a better position to be able to weather the storm? The things we talked about back then are really still the same kinds of things that we could talk about today.
Yeah, and it continued to going back in history, Bruce. I kind of did something similar, and the underlying theme is supply chain resilience. It's not a new topic. It's been around for the longest time. I studied it back in school many years ago, and there's an article published in 2005 by an amazing professor I had the opportunity to have. Joshi Sheffy from MIT, and he talks about resilience as the ability of organizations to be prepared and handle unexpected risk events, and defines the ability of that organization to be able to recover quickly to any type of disruptions and being able to go back to status quo, or if not, go back to even being better than they used to be, servicing the market and also outperforming the competition. So resilience, which is the core topic we're covering here, is not a new item, and it's something that should be looked at by supply chain professionals as something that becomes a competitive advantage or enhances the competitiveness of the company. As supply chain professionals, we're always challenged to optimize, reduce cost, when in reality, we want to be at the table and add an element of competitiveness instead of supply chain being at the element of squeeze every penny, optimize, reduce cost. There's a huge element of resilience that adds to the competitiveness of the organization. I think, Steve, you were mentioning at the beginning, some of our clients are thriving now. But I will say, and I will challenge, that those that are better now will come up even better out of this, because they had a much more resilient supply chain. They probably were not as lean. They probably were not as optimized a month or two ago. But that's just one element to measure their supply chain. A second element that is often forgotten, and it comes surface immediately, just as some of the numbers that we're seeing in the news spiking logarithmically in the charts, is resilience. It comes up in this article in 2005. The first couple of lines starts with the SARS pandemic, and this is 15 years ago, right? And not too long ago, we got the tsunami and the impact in Japan and the disruptiveness that caused through the world supply chain. So there's a lot that we should learn, and as much as we need to manage the now and the execution and the firefighting of today, leaders should start finding time to start thinking, what do I need to do to make my supply chain more resilient?
I think that's a great word, that resilient. You know, when we did that webcast 10 years ago, we talked a lot about flexibility and designing a supply chain, specifically designing a supply chain to hedge against fluctuations. But I think that's only one aspect of resiliency, right? There's more to it than that, isn't there?
Yeah, I think what other aspects would you call out, Bruce?
Well, that supply chain design is really about creating flex, is that we were talking about then was, and emphasizing, was flexibility in your supply network. Mm-hmm. So we get to the concept of, if I manufacture products, that perhaps I want to manufacture products, set up my manufacturing plants in such a way that I have overlap in the capabilities across those facilities, so that if one goes down, that, or if it's disabled or I can't get to it, that I can still make my products in other places. To Sebastian's point, that's not the lowest cost supply chain design, right? But it's a well-reasoned investment in resiliency. And there are tools that you can use to quantify that. We always encourage our clients to invest in network designs and having the ability to optimize their inventory so that they have the quantitative models. I think everybody's calling it a digital twin today. But they have the quantitative capability to really assess what's optimal, what's lowest cost, where do I make investments in resiliency, and you know, is that a well-reasoned investment that I'm going to make so that I'll be, I can manage the downturn when it comes.
Yeah, so you hit a great point, Bruce. I think you're hitting on redundancy, which is an element of resilience. Redundancy is having the ability that if engine one is down, I'm able to turn or continue to operate with engine two. Nobody will challenge an airplane design because it has two engines, right? The lives of many people on board rely on the ability of that plane to operate even with one engine. And nobody's going to question the cost that it drives to have a second. And it's not just the engine, there's redundancy all over an airplane. And nobody's challenging or questioning the need for redundancy in that design. But in supply chain, we've been taking a lot of extremes and a lot of cuts. And of course, we've seen it all along. We consolidate manufacturing, we consolidate distribution centers. If a plant is, if we have a product that is manufactured in a couple of places, we want to put it in one. But then we shouldn't be surprised when the unforeseen events like this and other not as extreme as this hit, that the supply chain gets hampered and is not able to respond. So as much as optimizing and consolidating vendors and having one single well-established relationship is important, we got to go back and say, what if all things fail? What do we do? And when we don't have a redundant pad to mitigate and continue to be resilient. So redundancy is number one. I'll add a couple more. Standardization of process. We've been living in a decade of customization and personalization of goods. And that drives a significant amount of complexity in supply chain and manufacturing. I think for going back to design for resilience, the more that we can standardize processes so they can move and be done anywhere at any time, we're going to be able to meet that. And it doesn't need to be compromising on customization, but being able to transport and move that design elsewhere. And the third one, probably my favorite from my early days, is postponement. And it hits back to what you said, Steve, at the beginning, that companies are being now selective or choiceful in what they make. But if the supply chain design was made for postponement, the concept of postponement is that I make a product unique almost at the end of the making process, but all throughout is the same. I use the same raw materials. I use the same manufacturing facility. Most of the combination of those components or pieces or ingredients are almost the same. And it's almost at the end when I make that final decision. I postpone, I delay my decision to make that product unique. So that goes back into standardization. And I think postponement has been abandoned and it's probably the right time to bring it back. And that will add to the resilience of the supply chain. Bruce, you may have a few more.
Yeah, well, I always, just to build upon that, I always think back. I started my career in the sporting goods industry, in the sports apparel industry. And in the licensed sporting goods industry, there was a term called hot markets, which was referencing, you know, just think about, you know, the Super Bowl. And if you are a t-shirt manufacturer that is waiting to put the logo of the winning Super Bowl team on that shirt, they do everything the same. All right, so it's a white t-shirt, you've got your sizes, you've got, you know, the different colors, different variations. And the last thing that they do is they put the Super Bowl winning team on the shirt. So they are prepared, they are postponing that final decision until the last possible minute to be able to serve the needs of those different hot markets. So I think that's a good example of it. But how do you replicate that, you know, across, you know, the broader consumer products industry?
Perfect example.
You know, and then you kind of get to the question. So if the objective is resiliency in our supply chain so that we're able to weather the future storms, then, you know, what would we like to see consumer product companies and even life science companies doing to try and create that resiliency? We talked about we want to achieve flexibility. We want to achieve postponement, redundancy, that those are investments we want to make. What we'd like to see our clients do, I think, is have the analytical ability to be able to see what that looks like. So that what they're consciously designing their supply chains for to create those capabilities. Mm-hmm. And then we want them to have an operating model that gives them time and permission to plan, right? So that it's part of their quarterly or annual hygiene to run through scenarios and look at their supply chain design and understand where their tipping points are, what's changed, and what should I therefore tweak in my supply chain, right, as a response to that. But that I'm making time and I have a way of working, just like every one of our clients goes through an operating planning process every year and maybe a strategic planning process every 3 years. We want our clients to every 6 months or every year to go through a supply chain design process and reassess where they are and have they made the right investments in this concept of resiliency.
That's such a critical point, Bruce. I think it's probably one key takeaway from specific to supply chain leaders coming out of this crisis is every time a supply chain design is done, and we participated in many over the years, there's the sense of, yeah, we're going to continue to do this, but we end up with once and done. The network is designed one way and stays there forever. Inventory levels or policies or sourcing strategies, etc., are done one way, once in a great way, but the world's not static, the world moves. So if there's one key takeaway is that this regular exercise, as you recommended, maybe quarterly, annually, takes place. And I will add, I think there's significant elements and abilities and capabilities now that allows it, that it doesn't need to be full. You can do a big assessment once, but then set up some artificial intelligence or deep analytics that if you identify those variables that have changed, your design must change, that alerts you when is the right time to do the next full reassessment, whether it's quarterly, annually. But this element of assessing your supply chain resilience and your supply chain design more often must be a key takeaway for all supply chain leaders.
Yeah, thanks, Sebastian. That's a great takeaway to leave us with. So appreciate your perspective, as always, chatting with you guys. I learned a ton. Sebastian, thank you for coming back. And Bruce, hopefully we'll have you join us again. Thanks for the discussion. Stay safe, stay healthy, guys. And we'll talk soon, all right?
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, have a good day. So thank you all for listening. And again, a huge thanks to Bruce and Sebastian for sharing their perspective and words of wisdom. You know, reflecting back on the conversation, to me, what was most pronounced was, in a lot of ways, a shift in mindset. You know, we talked about a shift from being reactive to being more proactive. We talked about a shift in some ways, having a fixed mindset in terms of what your design looks like, to being more flexible and adaptable, and foreseeing changes that you know might be happening in the future. But what I found really interesting, and I hadn't heard them share before, was a shift in mindset from being one that is, you know, squeezing that rock and being as optimized and as efficient in your supply chain as possible. We talk so much about supply chain efficiency. Sebastian's example of, you know, the airplane and the extra engine, that's not the most efficient way to design an airplane, but it's the smartest way. And it's a way that's factoring in all the potential risks that could happen. And perhaps a lesson learned from this for companies is to start to factor in that risk as they're designing their supply chains. It might not be the most optimal way. It might not be the most efficient way, but I think it's going to be the only way going forward. So thanks everyone for listening. Appreciate your support, and we'll look forward to catching up again soon.